Double Negative is a new collection of poetry from Vona Groark. This is Vona's seventh collection of poems, and Vona joins me in studio. You're very welcome. Vona, a double negative makes a positive, am I right? But there's a good deal of adding the negatives together before you get there. Is that the meaning of the title of your collection?
Yes, it is. I mean, I think I'm hinting at the idea of there being a possible positivity or positive resolution somewhere available, but it's not necessarily on the surface. So double is the first word, negative is the second word you encounter in the book. But I think if you keep digging, you can get underneath the surface of those words and get to something that's a little more cheerful, loose, conversational and breezy, I think.
And you start the collection not with a poem of your own, but a short poem by Emily Dickinson called Poem Number 647. Will you read it first and then describe the reasons why you put it there before your collection?
I will. To fill a gap, insert the thing that caused it. Block it up with other and twill yawn the more. You cannot solder an abyss with air.
It's a great poem. So what's the significance of that to do with double negative?
Well, I love the way she starts off making it sound like she knows the answer, like she's instructing you and she's giving you a set of rules as to how you can do something. So to fill a gap, insert the thing that caused it. But by the end of the poem, you're thinking, what? You can't solder an abyss with air. Fine, what could you possibly solder an abyss with? And so it leaves you kind of stranded. And I love the way she does that in only six lines. So that's very interesting to me. But also the idea, of course, the content is to do with this idea that you can intensify something and that it might actually resolve it by intensifying it. And that's, I suppose, what I'm doing with double negative, intensifying with a view to possibly reaching a resolution.
So what were your preoccupations before you set about writing these poems?
Well, this is my first book in 5 years. My last book of poems was X in 2014. And since then, I've been thinking very much about the fact that I am, I suppose, for lack of a better phrase, middle-aged. And I was thinking how little of that there is in Irish poetry, how few women in particular write about becoming middle-aged. And I thought, well, this seems like an obvious thing for me to write about because it's what I'm living. So I don't want to say that that is a negative necessarily, although there are definitely negative aspects to it. But I think that idea of ageing, of both the losses that accrue with ageing, but also perhaps some of the surprising gains that come with it. But certainly the idea of ageing is there as a presentiment in the book.
Yes, because a number of poems, you know how many, start with the title. They're usually two-word title, and it's against. So there's against despair, against boredom, against monotony, against loneliness, against darkness.
Yep. Well, isn't that what you want from a book of poems? This is what I want from a book of poems, so that's why I wrote it this way. I don't want a book of poems that is for despair and melancholy and loneliness, etc. I want a book of poems that confronts these things, but that also rescues something from that, that does a kind of salvage operation and pulls something back from these ideas that are so common in life and I think also common in poetry, but maybe the redress of them is not something that we're so used to encountering.
So when you say against disappointment or melancholy, you within each poem then face up to this fact and try and work it out poetically.
Yes, face up maybe not so much because I don't go at it head on because I'm not that interested in poems that go at their subject matter head on. I like poems that are kind of sly and that achieve their ends by sleight of hand or by doing things that are surprising. So very often I pretend, in the same way that Emily Dickinson does with that poem, I pretend that I know what I'm talking about and then I make the poem veer off in a slightly different direction so that the ending is a little, I suppose, slippy than you might anticipate from the beginning of the poem.
Okay, will you read Against Disappointment?
Yes. Against Disappointment. The pigeon that ousted the missile thrush on my winter balcony, who dropped me runs of speckled song in return for handfuls of crumbs, this pigeon, for all my knocking and shooing, thinks he owns the place. He is waiting for me to leave out bread, and I am waiting for him to be a missile thrush. That's the way of it these days. I could crack the code if I knew what it meant, but what would I do then?
So sometimes the fun is trying to crack the code and failing, because it's enjoyable or engaging in its own way.
Yeah, I think that's it for me. Writing poems is a form of writing in code, because if you just want to write at something, at any subject matter head on, then you would just do it as reportage or as journalism. But you are translating it into a different kind of language, a different kind of approach, which uses imagery, metaphor, simile, different kinds of propositions, different kind of angles on the subject matter. And it is, I suppose, a kind of code, but you don't want it to be a code that can't be broken by the reader. You want it to be an invitation to the reader to join in and try and work it out, as opposed to saying no.
Another poem in the collection is called This Poem, and I thought it was about a poem that was kind of running away from the writer. But I think you're suggesting maybe that it might be running away or a bit slippery for the reader.
Yeah, I wanted a poem that is interested in being and doing the things that poems don't usually do, or that language doesn't usually do. So it's a kind of a set of propositions that say, well, look, here's the things that I would like to do as a poem that, of course, are impossible unless you accept that I'm not telling literal truth, that I'm telling a kind of a metaphorical truth.
Okay, so can we hear this poem?
This poem. This is the poem that won't open no matter where you press. This is the poem that cries on street corners and plays at being lost. This is the poem arranged at a tilt so all the words slide off. This is the poem with lacquered roses closing in on themselves after dark. This is the poem that plays itself out in dives in the small hours. This poem likes to fool around in other people's cars. This poem gives away small coins and winks at strangers' kids. This is the poem that understands what it is to be a dog. This is the poem with a teensy tattoo you'll never get to see. This poem has no big plans for you, which is something, as poems go.
It's quite funny, isn't it?
You know, I hope so.
In the middle of the collection then, as you say, there's a kind of spine going through it with all the against poems.
Yeah.
But then in the middle of it, there's this quite long, would you call it a prose poem?
Yeah.
It's called For Real. Now, we won't have time for you to read it, but tell us why you wrote this prose poem, which is really more looking out than the more introspection of some of the other poems.
It's very interested in what's going on in the world at the time of its composition, which was last summer, which, if we can remember back to that, we had a heat wave and we had a lot of occurrences that related to the heat wave. And it seemed as though the whole world was kind of scorching, both politically and environmentally, and to do with various crises, the refugee crisis and so on. And I wanted the book to be alive to what was happening in the wider world. I didn't want it to be just an introspective book, a very personal book. I wanted it to feel or to take the temperature of what was happening outside itself. So this is the only poem that was designed as a prose poem, and it's written in these little snatches or glimpses that consider various things that are going on in the world. So I think it's a kind of a reflexive answer to the more personal elements that are in the collection.
And why would you have written that in prose format?
Because it was different in tone, and so I wanted the form to fit more easily into that difference. So it made sense to me not to have it in stanzaic free verse the way all the other poems are, but to have it in this kind of loosier, breezier, but also, I think, very controlled kind of prose.
Now, you were recently returned from New York, where you've been researching?
Yes, I was lucky enough to be a Cullman Fellow at the New York Public Library, and I spent my fellowship there 9 months researching the lives of Irish women who worked as domestic servants in New York in the 1880s and the 1890s. My great-grandmother was one of them, and so I am at the early stages of a project which will investigate not so much her life, because there are no facts really other than a few instances where she enters the official record. I don't have any photographs or diaries or so on, because she was too busy working to leave any of that. But I have a typical life, hers and the lives of all the other women who did exactly what she did. And that's what I'm interested in writing about.
And is there a lot of material on that? Because of the same reasons you're talking about your relative, you could imagine that it would be very hard to... That people would have kept diaries.
They didn't, by and large, keep diaries. There are emigrants' letters back to Ireland, back to their families. And that has been the subject of that cache, those archives of letters have been the subject of quite a lot of historical research, which has really gotten to grips with the subject.
Well, Double Negative is the new collection of poetry from Fiona Groark, and this is Fiona's 7 collection of poems, and it's published by Gallery Press. Fiona, thank you so much.
Thank you.